The scripture I'm going to read from Numbers takes place when the Hebrews had come out of Egypt. They had gone through the Sinai, up the other side, and they're on the verge of the promised land. This land that had been promised for generations was now visible, but they weren't in it yet. And Moses is sending 12 spies ahead to reconnoiter the land. This is what I'm reading about. And they came to the Wadi Eshcol and cut down from there a branch with a single cluster of grapes, and they carried it on a pole between two of them. They also brought some pomegranates and figs. That place was called Wadi Eshcol because of the cluster the Israelites had cut down there. At the end of the 40 days, they returned from spying out the land. And they came to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation of the Israelites in the wilderness of Paran, the Kadesh. They brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land and told them, "We came to the land to which you sent us. It flows with milk and honey. Yet the people who live in the land are strong. And the towns are fortified and very large. And besides, we saw the descendants of Anak there." Anak was a legendary giant. "The Amalekites live in the land of the Negeb. The Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites live in the hill country. And the Canaanites live by the sea and along the Jordan." But Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and then occupy it, for we're able to overcome it." Then the men who had gone up with him said, "We are not able to go up against this people, for they are stronger than we." So they brought to the Israelites an unfavorable report of the land that they had spied out, saying, "The land that we have gone through as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants. And the people that we saw there are of great size. There we saw the Nephilim." The Anakites came from Nephilim. "To ourselves we seemed like grasshoppers. So we see that." I'm going to make some comments about this scripture, then read the New Testament, make some comments. It all comes together as one. Ever? But here we have the Hebrews on the verge of their promised land. They had come a great distance and through great turmoil, tribulation, to get through the Sinai to this place in their journey. They send spies ahead to spy out the land. And they return with discouraged words. Quote, "A land that devours its inhabitants." What is that? What is here? "The people we saw are of great size." "We seemed like grasshoppers. Towns were fortified and very large. They refused to go forward." "I'm not going, are you? I'm not going. You heard what he said. I'm not going." They would rather stay where they were than move ahead. Now, this God that they worshiped had brought them out of Egypt, led them safely through the Sea of Reeds, down the western slope of the Sinai Peninsula, preceding them with a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night, gave them the Ten Commandments at Sinai, the tabernacle, the Ark of the Covenant, led them up the east side of the Sinai Peninsula, protected them from snakes and so on, and all this leadership of God, and now they get to the point where they say, we're not going. You've got us to our destination, but just this side of our destination, and we're not going. Because they had gotten a discouraging word. The spies had committed the sin of discouragement. No. We may do that today. We may be a wet blanket upon someone's grief. We may cast a discouraging word upon someone's journey. We may have caused some people to stop short of what they could have become, where they could have gone. We, today, are capable of that without knowing. We can tear people up so they can't move forward, discouraging them. Who have you discouraged? And oh my God, who have I? You don't want to go into that profession. I've never seen you as going into that profession. You should be going into this profession. A discouraging word. Are you going into that profession when you could go into this one that's much more lucrative? And we just, a discouraging word, they're moving forward, they have a dream, but we stifle it. Why do you want to go to that college? It's too far. Why do you want to go to that college? It's too close. Why do you want to go to that college? It's too expensive. Why do you want to go to that college? Why don't you just not go to college and work at home, work in the community? There are jobs around here. A discouraging word. How many times have we influenced someone not to go? To their plan. Why do you want to marry her? She doesn't have a good family. Why do you want to marry him? He doesn't have a good reputation. These little remarks are discouraging words. We discourage them from entering their promised land. We've torn people apart and walked away, leaving them to flounder, want to do what they didn't want. They wanted to do something else. They wanted their promised land. Apostle Paul said, courage. Build one up. The New Testament lesson is from Acts. And here we find that Paul is near the end of his life. There's only 28 chapters. That's the end of Paul. Reading the 28th. Some encouraging words. He's on his way to Rome, his last destination. 3 months later, we set sail on a ship that had wintered at an island, an Alexandrian ship with the twin brothers as its figure. We put in at Syracuse and stayed there for 3 days. Then we weighed anchor and came to Regium. After 1 day there, a south wind sprang up, and on the second day, they came to Petula. There we found believers and were invited to stay with them for 7 days. So we came to Rome. The believers from there, when they heard of us, came as far as the Forum of Appius and Twin Paris to meet us. And on seeing them, Paul thanked God and took courage. On seeing them, Paul thanked God and took her. Paul needed encouragement. For 15 years, he engaged in 3 missionary journeys. And on the very first journey, in one of the very first towns, Lystra, he was stoned and left for dead. He suffered beating and flogging and imprisonment. Paul needed courage. 5 times during his journeys, he received the 39 lashes. Jesus received the 39 lashes once, and he couldn't carry his cross. It was almost bringing you to the point of death, and he received it 5 times during those 15 years. 3 times he was beaten with rods. He's assaulted by bandits, disappointed with false friends. Paul needed courage. Said in Scripture that a crowd yelled, "Down with him! A scoundrel like him is better dead." And they threw dirt. The high priest ordered that he be struck on the mouth. Paul needed courage. Forty Jews took an oath that they wouldn't eat or drink until Paul was killed. Killed. Governor Felix said to Paul, "Paul, you are mad. Your great learning has made you mad." Paul needed encouragement. And at the end of his life, you know, he was sent to Rome. He claimed Roman citizenship. And he's shipped to Rome. He's tossed about in a tempestuous wind, a nor'easter. The boat is crashed, and he's bitten by a poisonous snake. Is there no end? Paul needed encouragement. He needed encouragement. And then his ship nears the port of Rome. In the distance, he sees people waving. He sees people jumping up and down. He hears cheering. These people have come from as far away as the Three Taverns and the Forum of Appius. These people whose lives he must have touched along the way, he sees them and Scripture says, Paul thanked God and took courage. He was encouraged. Here at the end of his journey of life, I can picture Paul's face brightening, his weather-beaten face crinkling with a smile. Here are these people. Here are these wonderful people, the joy of committing encouragement. I thank God for those people and for those people yet today who encourage. Someone told me that there's only 3 rules for the church. Encourage. 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 Who have you and I encouraged? You know, instead of standing around and saying this about that person and that about that person, and tearing people up, and tearing the church up, or tearing the community up, or tearing the government up. When have we offered an encouraging word? You know, every once in a while I get a card, not at Christmas, not at Pastor Appreciation Day, but just a card in the middle of nowhere, you know, for no reason, and it's from somebody that I knew perhaps in my previous church, and it just has a line or two of something meant something. I've been retired for 8 years, and I can still need encouragement. Who could you send a card to? Or visit? Now, I know if I say, is there someone you could visit that would be encouraged? Everybody here knows of a visit they've been meaning to make. I'm one of them. Person going to visit. This is coming week looks good, but then the next week looks better. But I'm going to visit them. Let's do it. Encourage. Encourage that person who is ill at home or who is lonely. You know, it's so easy. It's so easy to call that son on the phone. Not at a birthday, not at Christmas, but to call on the phone. When he sees you, your name on this caller ID, he'll wonder what had happened, but you just call to say, I love you. Visit a daughter at college. You say, I don't want to interfere with your friends or your lessons or anything. Your dad and I just want to have lunch with you and tell you we're proud of you. You can't imagine something simple that would be a life-changing encouragement. It's so easy. You know, I learned one time, when I'm in my yard, deadheading flowers or trimming bushes, I love my yard. There are two things that can make me stop and listen. Sound of a distant woodpecker. Love. And the sound of geese flying overhead. And I've learned about those geese as they fly in their V shape. They're honking, but the leader is not honking because the leader is creating the draft and it takes effort, it takes work. It's the ones behind that are honking. And I have read that they're honking encouragement to the leader. My friends, honk if you love your leader. Honk if you love your pastor. Honk if you love your elder, deacon, trustee. Encourage. Courage.